you lost a survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh baby, this is why Blank lost.
Welcome to this week's edition of Why Blank Lost. I'm your host, David Bloomberg, and I can barely stand still for 5.5 minutes, let alone 5.5 hours. As I mentioned last week, Jessica is up to her ears in work right now, so she can't be here. But I'm very happy to welcome back as a special guest, who is on the podcast for our Why Blank One Survivor New Zealand special, the godmother of Worldwide Survivor, Shannon Gates.
Thank you for calling me the godmother. Yeah, Carl seems to think that that's like a really big compliment, even though we got him voted out. So I'm also going to take it as a compliment.
That's right. He's changed his Twitter handle now to Godfather Carl.
Yeah, that's not going to get old. Like, people aren't going to be over that in a week at all. So it's a really, really good classic old time Twitter handle.
Well, let me begin with a mazel tov on your recent engagement.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, my fiance proposed in a Survivor / RHAP themed proposal. In case anyone had any questions about whether this is my entire life, I think that answers that. So, yeah, he set up like a whole tribal council and had people from the podcast you may know, like Mike and Rob and Nicole and Nick. And yeah, they all had videos for us about our relationship. And it was really, really great.
Yeah, I saw the video and it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, he did good work. And it was just like, it was funny because so we had like a whole tribal council, as I said, and then he had people from our lives speaking as like a jury about our relationship. So the first person was my brother / intern, people might know from my podcast on the International Survivor. And then the next person was Mike Bloom. And I was like, I don't know where this is going from here. And then, yeah, Nick and Rob and Nicole. So it was really great because I love all those people. I obviously respect and admire them. So the fact that he like hounded them to get content for the proposal is pretty amazing.
Yeah. So do you have a date picked out yet?
Yes, we do. That's the kind of person that I am, that within a week of being engaged, I already had the date next December and the venue and everything. So yeah, it's going to be a sunny, December's a terrible wedding time in America. Like when I told any of the Americans, they were like, that's awful. But then they realized that summer here in Australia, so it'll be very nice.
Did you cross-reference it with all the different international Survivor seasons to make sure there would be, you know, no problems there?
Well, it is bad because it's in December, so there will be U.S. Survivor. And when we were picking out days to get married, I was like, well, we can't do Thursday because that's Survivor Day.
I was thinking maybe you did it late enough in December.
No.
So that it would be over.
No, I'm like really concerned about the fact that like my wedding week is going to be during Survivor, but I'm like, I'll just watch Survivor. It's fine. These are things I've already thought about.
Yes. So, well, I know you weren't here for predictions last week. I should have told you to like put your prediction out on Twitter so we could have, you know, both discussed our predictions.
Yeah.
But at least from my side, I was right about this week being a 2-hour story arc this week. I was just wrong about what the story arc was. And I got one prediction correct, although I'm not sure I could have ever foreseen the rise and fall of Godfather Carl. I did enjoy that these two episodes were somewhat different in that the second one, at least in my opinion, I guess some people were a little bit fooled, but to me, I didn't think it ever even tried to hide who was getting the boot. It was the type where we just sit back and see a particular person's game going south and we ride along with everyone else in knowing what was going to happen.
Yeah, well, it was weird because Christian and Gabby, they weren't the swing votes in that second episode. Like, we knew from the get-go that they had already flipped. So it all came down to Mike, but I was like, why would Mike ever go with... I mean, I guess he does have an individual relationship with Angelina from Jebeni, but then, and he obviously has Nick as well, but I just felt like he was going to go give that power back to the Goliaths, which were very much like now Kara and Allison seem to be the Goliath contingent. So I didn't feel like there was ever any chance that Carl was living through that episode.
Yeah, I mean, just watching it, they didn't even give a hint that it could be anyone else until the very end. So to me, it was just a sit back and enjoy the ride type episode.
Yeah, it is funny how Carl just like emerged as this godfather out of nowhere. I kind of think back to Survivor Game Changers where Brad Culpepper became this like huge leader, like right at the very end. And he was being so mean to Ty and he like completely changed as a person. Like Survivor Game Changers, it spent the entire time building Brad Culpepper back up to be this great person and then degraded him right at the very, very end to the point where he's like wearing that sack and he looks like a tribal leader. And it's like, how did this happen? And that's what happened with Carl through this. Like, it just got worse and worse and worse. And like probably for the best for his edit that he did go, because I don't know if he could survive a much worse edit, you know, going forward, even though he does seem happy that he was portrayed as a leader and a godfather in his exit interviews.
Yes, yes. He'll, you know, take it as a compliment. Wear it with pride, I guess. But now, of course, for us, the question is why it happened. And for anyone who hasn't listened to this podcast before, to answer that, we'll go through all the available information and a set of rules that I wrote after the first season and have been modifying ever since. Anyone who wants to play along, you can find those rules at www.robhasawebsite.com/survivor rules. So let's get started, because we have two players to talk about who had very different playing styles, but went out back to back. So it's time to figure out why Alec and Carl lost.
Yeah. Well, I'm very glad we get to talk about Alec as well, because I was so wrong about him in the preseason. I think he was an absolute force to be reckoned with in this season. So I really had to rack my brain to be like, where did it all go wrong for him? But I think we're going to get to the bottom of it here.
I think so, too. And I did, before we get into the rules, I did see your tweet about that. And I thought, well, I think I have a pretty clear idea, but we'll see, you know, we'll compare notes as we go along here.
Yeah, I was really impressed watching it on screen, and we'll definitely talk about what he did right. But then as I had to like analyze it, I started digging through where it all went wrong. And I think there is a pretty clear thread. So yeah, we'll definitely talk about it.
Okay, so we'll start with the first rule, which of course is to scheme and plot. And it seems to me that both Alec and Carl understood the need to strategize. Alec made an alliance with Allison on day one, and they were very tight until the end. And though we didn't really see much of it, we're just relying on what they've told us outside of the game mostly. However, we did hear that Alec was supposedly part of the six-person alliance on the Goliath tribe, and though that was also apparently overblown, and he quickly turned on Natalia at the swap despite her supposedly being his partner within the six. He said in a web confessional back in the fourth episode that at that swap tribe, he didn't see it as three Goliaths and two Davids, but as an opportunity to become part of a better alliance. He wasn't just playing a numbers game, and people should have been paying attention to the future for alliances outside their existing one. So all those are very good things that he did early in the game.
Yeah, I feel like a couple weeks ago you spoke about how John had relationships, but they weren't necessarily strategic relationships. Whereas I feel with Alec, he had relationships with everyone, but they were very strategic. And he did really work with people kind of from the beginning. As you said, he was like in the majority of the Goliaths, and then he was making the decisions at the Swap Tribe. And obviously he made moves there that can be debated, but he was definitely in the middle of everything. And then he got to the Merge, and he was the one really crossing those tribal lines. He had the Strike Force, he had the Goliath thing. Like, it's crazy how many relationships that he had. And to me, that social capital he was using strategically as well. So I would definitely say that he schemed and plotted very well.
Yeah. And it's not just, I do want to say, it's not just what we saw on TV. It's not just, you know, what we might have heard, but like even John, when he did his interviews with Mike Bloom, he talked about how Alec was immediately talking to Christian and Gabby at the Merge. And although the Strike Force never actually worked, it never actually voted together, he had all those relationships and, it, you know, just like you said, those strategic interactions with all the different people. He was willing to jump on board with the Davids, and he even said at the Merge that people were naive to think things would stay David and Goliath, although for a while it did.
Yeah, and his secret scenes, he talks a lot about having really individual connections. He always compares it to like either surfing or like serving people at a bar. Those are like his two go-to metaphors. But then it really struck me at the Merge, I was like, Alec is the person here who is strategically aligned or close with every single person in the game. Like, he obviously had a thing with Elizabeth from the Swap Tribe and Carl and Davy. He had all the Goliaths. They had the Goliath Strong. And then the rest of the Davids were in the Strike Force. So he was working and had an individual working relationship with every single person at the merge. And to me, that's just incredibly impressive. I don't know how many people you can say that for.
Right. And the thing is, though, that even as he was doing all those things, it seemed like much of it didn't pan out. And he explained in interviews that part of the reason was they all came together at the merge and made these new relationships, but it also reconnected people from old relationships. And what he found was that those old relationships ended up being stronger. So it was the right idea, and it did save Christian for one vote, but it overall didn't seem to pan out for Alec.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that. I think it's some of the other rules, like scheming and plotting too much. He was giving a lot of people favors, and he did not get return those favors, especially like in his hour of need when the Davids had power and he'd helped them so much and they immediately gunned for him. I think that one of the reasons he went for Natalia, he said in exit interviews, was he didn't want to be at the bottom of the Goliath, and he didn't feel very comfortable with the Goliath. So he did vote out Natalia. Obviously, he drew first blood, and then he was working with the Davids. But as you said, at the merge, it did become this tribal thing again. I think he was working definitely against that in ways that he was helping the Davids, but it became very split. And the Davids went back to each other, and the Goliaths went back to each other. So he was back in that structure that he hadn't wanted, that he'd actively tried to get rid of by taking Natalia out, and it still just kind of snapped back there. I don't know if that's based on the people, if that's based on this very clear theme, but it's not back to a place. I think he would have rather it was muddled, more complex. I think he's the type of player who works when it's fluid and fast rather than this like tribal war thing. And that didn't really work out very well for him. And obviously until the Carl vote, that's where we were seeing this very strong David versus Goliath thing.
Yeah. And you know, you said it could be the people, it could be the David versus Goliath thing. It was interesting. I mean, I can think of at least three different players we saw saying, I want to cross tribal lines, and then within minutes say, but I'm not going to. And this happened, you know, vote after vote. And it seems like if those particular players would have gotten together, they could have crossed tribal lines together, but they kept reverting back to the easy, well, we're a Goliath majority, we're just going to do that.
Yeah, well, the Goliaths, it's so tough because they're probably thinking it's hard to sit next to Davids at the end, just in terms of the fact that they're Davids and these seem to be very impressive, likable people on the David tribe. So I think they're like, well, we might as well just march the end with our numbers. Obviously, the Davids have no choice but to stick together. And it just like it got so much further on that it was going to be tribe versus tribe. But I feel like Alec actually helped the Davids more than he helped the Goliaths. He helped them every vote. Like since the Jeremy vote, he obviously took out Natalia. So that was voting out Goliath. Then at the merge, he fought for Christian over Elizabeth, even though Elizabeth was a David. Having Christian there, I think, was much more of a unifying factor. Elizabeth wasn't going to be working with some of the other Davids, so he kept them pretty cohesive there. Then he obviously told Nick about the Christian vote. And in exit interviews, we have heard that it was a few people kind of spreading that information, but he was the one that we saw doing that. That's the whole reason they got to save Christian, and that's really what started the ball rolling. Then at the next vote, he changes to Angelina, which did not help him at all. All it did was really just alienate Angelina, and then the Goliaths were dead and buried. So at every vote, he was helping the Davids, and that's why I just think it's really ironic to me that the second that the Davids were in power and had the numbers to take out anyone, they took out him, and especially Christian, who he had specifically saved twice and really helped out there. Christian was the one, obviously, who could have stepped off the perch, could have given him immunity, or just flipped and really been the one individually to save him, and even he wouldn't do it. So I think Alec is a cautionary tale that favors don't get repaid on Survivor, and he gave so many favors. Like, he talks about getting tips. Like, he was giving everyone tips, and he got absolutely nothing through the season. So I feel bad for him, because I feel like he probably thought that would pay off at some point, but it didn't.
No. And I think, you know, it's an interesting situation, because if I put myself in some of the David's shoes, I think I'll get to this later, but he talked a good game. But the actions, I don't know that the Davids saw that. What the Davids saw, and Christian in particular, was, you know, he didn't come tell Christian that he was in danger. He told Christian's ally. And then Christian, you know, he wrote down Christian's name.
Yeah.
And then when he flipped and turned on Angelina, they all knew that that was baloney, that it was just a last minute attempt to save face. So he was trying, but I don't know that he was trying in a way that the Davids really could see.
Yeah, that is really true. I think they might watch it back and be like, wow, thank God for Alec. He was really like our angel in the season. We could do nothing without him. But yeah, it's true, because it was so... He was playing, like, we'll talk about this, like, we're getting a bit into the second rule here, but he was definitely playing both sides more than I think anyone. But then the Davids can look at the side where he's not playing with them. Like, he saves Christian, but he votes for Christian. And this, to me, gets right into making your votes count. But it didn't count, you know. He wasn't getting the benefit either way. He wasn't helping the Goliath. In fact, he was almost damning them, you know, in his intel was really, in a way, really hurt the Goliath very often. And then he was helping the Davids, but not in a way that he actually got credit. So it wasn't enough of either one. He almost should have, like, picked a side and really gone with it, because he had two sides and he wasn't getting credit either way.
Right, right. All right, let's flip over to Carl here. And he also started scheming right away, as he realized on day one that he couldn't be just totally laid back. And I think that was his plan going in. He realized he had to start making alliances. He connected with Davey from the beginning. He became close with Nick later and even got an alliance name. They were the Rattlers.
Mm.
Carl told Josh that while we didn't see everything he did in the early goings, he was playing the whole time by lying low and watching everything. And other people definitely noticed him watching, which we'll get to in a little bit.
Yeah, for me, Carl is a weird one, because I think that he views the game pretty slowly. He's, you know, Gabby said in a secret scene that he only thinks one vote ahead. That was something that really annoyed her. And, you know, he calls the Goliath very simple strategically and basically yes. underestimates them. And then in a different web confessional, he talks about how you should always be humble. I was like, there's some cognitive dissonance happening here. but I do think that it kind of the opposite of Alec, who I said works really well with a more complex game. I think Carl works really well with these big groups and this, you know, divided tribal lines, or even at the beginning when it was like his group and Jessica. I think that works for him. And when it gets a bit faster, he kind of loses the thread a little bit. Obviously, he did get into the main contingent from the beginning, but he was also blindsided right at the beginning. So I think that he obviously schemed and plotted. And I wouldn't say that he hadn't, but there were definite holes in the scheming. And I do think that any of these Davids who pulled off miraculous things in those couple of weeks, you know, by taking out John, taking out Dan, getting the numbers back, I wouldn't say any of them hadn't schemed and plotted, and he was definitely a part of that. But we'll get into it, but definitely some holes there. But for the most part, he was scheming and plotting.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, he you mentioned that he said that some of the others were basic in their gameplay. And you know, we were just talking about how the Goliaths kept retreating to a Goliath strong mentality. And so from his standpoint, yeah, that is a pretty basic gameplay. We're going to stand with our numbers and we're going to pick you off. That's as basic as it gets, really. So from his standpoint, I can understand what he was saying for the Goliaths. But not everyone was quite so basic in their gameplay, because Gabby and Christian were certainly more complicated than he realized. And they saw that he was probably planning to cut them soon, as you know, he said in interviews that he knew Gabby was getting ready to flip. He just didn't realize it would be quite that soon.
Yeah, but in terms of the Goliaths, it's okay to be like, they're using this basic strategy now, but still not underestimate them as players, because Kara and Mike and Allison eventually do get a group together to make something work to get rid of him. So they had the ability there, and they're not just basic players. Maybe they had right. basic strategy for the beginning of the merge, but I think that everything was going so well for the Davids that, you know, as Rob and people have said, they became the Goliaths. I think that he got mm-hmm. a little bit too comfortable, a little bit too arrogant with the fact that it was going so well. Like, where could it go wrong? But then you forget the fact that people are capable of playing better than they maybe have been for the last couple of votes and actually making something work. I think if he hadn't lost sight of that, and for me, Carl lost sight of a lot of the fact that players are not just pawns, and they do have individual wants and needs and relationships, and that could come back to bite you. So we'll talk about that in some of the other rules, but he definitely seemed to forget that other players may want different things to him, and they may actually actively work to make that happen.
Yeah, and I think that leads to a big part of why Gabby and Christian flipped, which takes us to the second rule, because the second rule covers how players need to avoid scheming and plotting too much. So continuing with that thought process, I'm going to switch it up and do Carl first. I want to refer to a corollary within this rule that says, if any alliances do get out in the open, do not let it be known that you are the decision maker. even to those within your own alliance. Put another way, Stephen said in his blog that you never want to be the guy in the hammock, the guy who's issuing commands while he sways lazily in the breeze. And I know Carl apparently didn't see himself that way. In his eyes, you know, from what I've gathered on interviews and Twitter and web confessionals and the like, he was just hanging out at the shelter because he knew people would come to him, and that way he wasn't out scrambling around. But that's clearly not the way others saw it. You know, Mike said Carl was the godfather who gave orders. Gabby was not happy that Carl was acting like the godfather and trying to call all the shots. Again, multiple people calling him that. And even Alex said it in the first episode this week.
Yeah, I mean, if everyone's saying it, you have to think about the fact that it probably is you if everyone has the same perception of you. And the hammock thing is so bad. Like, that's a cold take at this point, but like, no one ever strategized in the hammock. It just looks optically so terrible. Everyone takes it so badly. So that was definitely a bad thing for him. And, you know, as you said, he wasn't keeping anything secret. Going right back to the Bing of the idol nullifier, like, was that really necessary? I get that he was pandering to the jury, but that's obviously something that put a lot of people offside. And the fact that they, like, returned serve with the ding a couple of episodes later, people will find out that you did the idol nullifier. They'll talk about it in camp. They'll take it back to the jury. Do you have to, like, put a spotlight on yourself? Like, I don't think that was necessary. That was way too much. And then in terms of the rule that is, don't blindside before it's necessary, Gabby was already coming for him, but was it necessary here to go for Allison and leave Gabby out and tell Christian? Like, there was a lot happening here. Obviously, he grossly underestimated the relationship between Gabby and Christian, which seems impossible to us because it's been like the core relationship of the entire show. And I have to imagine it's pretty obvious out there. It seems like they're always sitting together. They've been together since day one. I don't know how you could underestimate that relationship. But to me, it feels like he left her out in ways that he didn't necessarily, could have maybe brought her back in, maybe could have taken out one of his own Goliath connections. Someone like Kara, who was very, very happy to take him out, obviously, at the first chance. You know, he talked about in exit interviews how kind of all the Davids had their Goliaths, and Gabby obviously had Allison, that's why she wouldn't be on board with the plan. Nick had Mike. He obviously had Kara. Maybe you sacrificed that, like, pretty nothing connection, something, someone who ended up blindsiding him. Keep your allies happy. Get the numbers to the point where you don't need Gabby and Christian, because he still did need them, but he was trying to get too fancy. I don't think Carl could get fancy. I think that was his problem.
Well, I mean, another problem, which, you know, you talked about how he would tell Christian, even though it's clear to us, at least, that Christian and Gabby are so tight. But I think that goes back much further. You know, we saw him including Elizabeth in the plans to target Lyrsa. You know, Jessica and I talked about that at the time. You can't tell someone's close ally that you're planning to vote that person out. Mm. So he did it with Lyrsa. He did it again with Alec by telling Kara. And then he did it again this time with telling Christian to keep Gabby out of the loop so they could get rid of Gabby's ally. And you just can't expect secrets to stay secret if you're telling them to people's allies. I understand he had his reasons, and, you know, for example, he said in interviews that he and Kara had talked on Vuku, and she kept saying she wanted to work with him and Davy. So this was his attempt to work with her. But, and then also, he didn't think Christian would tell Gabby because the Davids had used all their advantages to keep him around. But both of those reasons fade away when you're talking about a person's tight ally.
Yeah, like, he did have his reasons, and at least there was rationale behind just like, everyone will do what I say because I told them to do it, which, it's great that he had his reasons, but it's hard to credit it when all the reasons were wrong and they were bad reads. And I mean, in all of, I think that, you know, the biggest sin for a Survivor player is to be really unaware. And he seemed really unaware of what all the other players wanted and how he was definitely coming across in those last couple of episodes. So his approach to strategy in those last couple of episodes, you know, what was not great. Obviously, we saw the rise and fall of Carl. And yeah, I think that was a pretty big part of his downfall.
Yeah. And then to pile on top of that, it seemed like his godfather role went beyond just directing the strategy and into the way he interacted with them. So Gabby was upset that Carl bossed her around and he was seemingly allowed to talk to others while she was not. We saw some of that on the show, but she also said in the web confessional that Carl lurked around and watched her every move and suggested that she would get scolded if she talked to the wrong people. And, you know, I had alluded to this earlier. She wasn't the only one to mention his lurking, because John had said similar things previously. And when he said in a web confessional a couple weeks ago that Carl was a little weaselly, he told Mike Bloom in a post-game interview that this is John talking, that the vibe he got from Carl was that he was constantly keeping track of where everyone was, which again goes back to what Gabby said also. And Carl admitted that he was always listening while people would talk in front of him, but he clearly did not realize that others were watching him while he was watching them, and they didn't like what they saw.
Yeah, you never want to be the lurker. Like, in life, in Survivor, I feel like that's just a really bad look.
All right, so now we can flip this back to Alec. And we already discussed how Alec did a good job of scheming and keeping his options open throughout his time there. But I also mentioned how, after trying to open things up, he pulled back and wrote down the name of Christian, who he was supposedly trying to work with. And this gets to just even in a season like this, where people seem very forgiving of strategic moves, you can't expect Charlie Brown is still going to want to try to kick the football after you've repeatedly pulled the ball away like Lucy. Yeah, even Alec himself has said in interviews that he understood it would be hard for Christian to trust and work with him after he tried to vote Christian out. Now, other Goliaths have done similar things, so you could say that for all of them, but it seemed like Alec was more of the, I don't know if leader is the right word, or contact point, whatever you want to call it. And the others who did that had some other connections as well, such as Allison has that connection with Gabby.
Yeah, I mean, definitely I feel like this rule, scheming and plotting too much, was probably the second worst rule for him. And we'll talk about the worst. Mm-hmm. I think everyone could probably guess. But yeah, he got way too cute. Like, he was playing both sides, as we said. Like, I feel like he really did have the strategic chops. And in secret scenes, he undercredits himself, I think, and says how he's really not that good a strategist. I think that he had the skills, but it was quite unfocused. It was like all over the place. It was way too much. I think he just needed more of a direction to control his own game. But I do think it's kind of amazing, because it should have come back on him much more than it did. Like, he seemed like he could get away with murder. He took out Natalia. We didn't really see him suffer for that with the Goliath. He was one of the main people that were the only person that we saw on the show telling Nick that Christian was going, and then Dan kind of said in next interviews that they just kind of like let that one go and kind of shrugged and didn't really ever find who'd been the leak. So he got away with so many things, especially because he was playing double agent the whole time, but I still think it was a bit too much.
Yeah, I agree. And it did surprise me when Dan said that, but I guess if nobody cops to it, then how are you going to prove it? You know, you can't grill each individual person. So how are you going to prove who it was that leaked the information?
Yeah, I love that was just their take on that, though. Like, yeah. Literally someone told, it's funny because in exit interviews, I've heard that up to 4 people told Nick about Christian. Angelina, Mike, Alec, and who was the 4th one? I think Allison as well might have told them. So there were so many leaks. I guess that's why they didn't pursue it further, because it was like half of them.
Yeah, they're all looking around going, I don't know who it was. Maybe we'll just let it go.
Yeah, like, let's not pursue this because it was me. But they don't know that it was actually like all of them. But yeah, that I think that probably does show why Carl was saying things like they had basic strategy, because the fact that they just let that go and just went into the next vote is kind of hilarious.
All right. So do you have anything else for Alec in this rule?
No, it was too much.
All right.
But that's it.
Yeah. All right, so that wraps up the second rule. Before we talk about how flexible these players were, Jessica had to pop in just to tell you about how flexible Simple Contacts is when it comes to getting contact lenses.
That's right. Simple Contacts is the most convenient way to renew your contact lens prescription and reorder your brand of contacts from anywhere in minutes. I have been wearing contacts for over 15 years, and a law in the U.S. requires a new prescription every year to buy lenses, even if your vision hasn't changed and you have perfectly healthy eyes.
So that means normally you would have to take time off work to see the eye doctor and pay for the eye exam and pay extra for a contact lens fitting to make sure the same contacts you've been wearing for years still work for you? That sounds ridiculous.
It really is ridiculous, but I avoided all of that with Simple Contacts. After registering and providing information about my previous prescription, I took an eye exam in my basement using my phone. The camera checked the redness in my eyes, and I read various letter arrangements. The process was quick, and the next day my exam was reviewed and my prescription renewed. My friend saw how easy it was and ordered from them as well, and my husband is going to do so as well.
And listeners can order from Simple Contacts also and save $20 on your lenses by going to simplecontacts.com/survivor20 or entering the code survivor20 at checkout. With Simple Contacts, you can renew your prescription and reorder your contacts from anywhere in minutes. You register, order, and take the test all at one time. The process is designed by doctors, and licensed ophthalmologists review every test carefully to make sure your eyes look healthy and your vision hasn't changed. This isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam, but it is the most convenient way to renew a prescription and reorder your contacts if your vision hasn't changed.
Simple Contacts has all of the brands and types of lenses you're familiar with, and Simple Contacts has been rated 5 stars over 3,000 times on the App Store, including one for me.
So, listeners, go to simplecontacts.com/survivor20 or enter the code survivor20 at checkout so you can save $20 on your lenses at Simple Contacts. Again, that's simplecontacts.com/survivor20 or enter the code survivor20 at checkout. Thanks for stopping by, Jessica.
Anytime, David.
Now let's move on to discuss the flexibility of Alec and Carl, which is the topic of the third rule. It seems to me that we have rather contrasting situations with these players. Do you agree?
Yes. Yes. Almost polar opposites, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, Alec had a lot to say about flexibility when he spoke to Josh in his Hollywood Reporter interview after episode 7 while he was still in the game. Alec said that when the merge happened, he wanted to make sure he was mingling with everyone, mostly David's, and showing them that he was ready to play the game and blur tribal lines. He said he set up as many plan Bs as he could. And for example, we mentioned earlier that he had been aligned with Allison since day one. He got along well with Mike, who was in with Nick. And, you know, Allison had a rapport with Gabby and Christian, and thus was born the Strike Force, again, at least in theory. And he also thought he maintained his good relationships with Davey and Carl.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, for me, flexibility is born from social capital. And as I said, he had just like an abundance of social capital that he could work with anyone. I kind of look at it like, for example, Laurel from Ghost Island. Everyone was so angry at her that she wouldn't flip and she was so inflexible. But the thing was that in listening to her deep dives, she didn't have the necessary relationships to go to other sides. So she didn't have the social capital to make that work. To me, Alec is the opposite of that, where he obviously had so many working relationships that he was kind of pulled in all the directions. He was very flexible, clearly. But if anything, probably too flexible. I know that this isn't a rule, but like maybe it should be a rule that like just because you can make plans with everyone, like maybe you shouldn't do that. Like just because you can help out everyone in the game, you know, the whole other side except for yourself, like maybe be a little bit more self-interested there.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to the second rule of, yeah, you want to be flexible, but don't scheme and plot with every single person.
Yeah, but it's funny because I thought about it during the John boot. And I thought, okay, so Alec lost Goliath. I think there were some issues with Alec and John that we never really saw. They might have been threatened by each other, but he lost that ally and a person from his side in John, but he kept Christian, who he was aligned with, and he kept Nick happy, who he was aligned with. And I thought, well, that's the whole thing about being aligned with every single person at the merge. Like, every person you lose is a loss, but every person who is saved is a gain. But the problem with that is I think he saw it like that. He was like, okay, well, John's gone. That's a bummer. But Christian's saved, and I really like Christian. I could work Christian. So he saw the upside in that. But I think being okay with anyone going because you're aligned with everyone, it makes it problematic because I feel like he lost control of his own game. He couldn't have just been happy with anything that happened because he had so many connections. He really needed to take that control back and really direct his own game.
Yeah, or at least, I don't know, find some way to make those connections continue. But at some point, well, at many points, he had to pick a side.
Yeah.
And so while he maintained the strategic discussions with the Davids, he kept picking the Goliaths.
But he didn't really pick them because he helps the Davids even more than the Goliaths.
Well, right. But I mean, outwardly, at least in the voting booth, you know, he picked the Goliaths, and that made things difficult for him as the game moved on.
Yeah, because it's not like he went to Nick and was like, I'm going to be voting for Christian, but I hope you save him. Like, he didn't go to Nick in the hope that Nick would save Christian. Like, he was trying to preserve that relationship with Nick. Then when Nick did save Christian, he was fine with it because, as I said, he was aligned with everyone. He was happy to have Christian around, but he had then voted for Christian. I don't think that he realized how damning these things were for his game until later. I, watching it, definitely didn't think that they were as bad because I'm like, well, he did tell them and he does have those connections. But truthfully, he did still go to the voting booth, as you said, write down Christian's name. He didn't tell them that he was doing it like wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Like, he literally did go to vote Christian out. He didn't know that Christian was going to have an idol played on him. So, you know, I do think that he was really torn. I think that when I kind of look at his game, I see that's where he's losing momentum. Like, he obviously at the merge had a lot of power. I'm pretty sure he got the fishy in that episode. But then when he gave that information, he voted for Christian. That didn't work out. And then he was forced to vote for Angelina, and that didn't work out. And he like never got on the front foot ever again from there. And I think a lot of that was due to, like, just a surplus of flexibility where, again, it just kind of all got a bit lost.
Yeah, I agree. Now, Carl, on the other hand, had a more straightforward view of things. He was sticking with the Davids, at least for now. And Gabby, well, you already talked about this a little bit, that Gabby said he only likes to think one move in advance. So when she would bring up alternate possibilities, just in case something went wrong, he didn't like that. He did try to work with Kara, although bringing her into the fold to try to target Alec wasn't the best timing, as we've already discussed. And he did work with Angelina, but it all came back to his vision of working with Davids.
Yeah, I mean, his final three, he said, was going to be Davy and Nick, obviously his two closest allies. And that's like a tough final three, like, in terms of people to sit next to. And he has said in extra scenes that he would be happy just to kind of get to the end and have made it 39 days and just kind of juke it out, which is a perplexing strategy to me.
That makes me grip my teeth so much when someone says that.
They're like, yeah, getting to the end is a victory, but is it a victory if you lose? Like, it's not really.
I mean, that goes back to the whole thing. You know, I've had to discuss that several times this season for whatever reason, which is, you know, the whole idea of Survivor is to win Survivor. And the whole idea for these podcasts is to talk about why people lost Survivor. So whether you did it in the first episode or you made it 39 days, you still lost Survivor. And, you know, we had that thing with Natalie early on where she did a whole Instagram post about why she really won. And like, well, you're not really getting it here. You
know? Yeah.
This is about the game.
Yeah. And also, like, losing at the end is sometimes the worst fate, I think. Like, it depends. Right. Like, if you're hated and derided, I think that shows so many flaws in your game. So it's like almost better. It's like better to be the fallen angel than to be like the losing finalist often. Getting to the end and getting no votes, like, who would want that? But right. Even so, like, he wanted to go to the end with Nick and Davy, and Nick was having secret scenes where he talked about how he was going to, you know, backstab Carl and take him out before the final four. So I don't even feel like he would have got there because he was aligned with some pretty shrewd players. So I think would have been gunning for him anyway. But he did look at the game, I think, like, with a pretty 2D view of it. As I said, I think he worked really well with those big alliances going up against each other, where it was like him and Jessica and their original group, or it was the Davids. And he worked really well with that. But getting beyond that, I think, was a bit difficult. And then some other things he said in exit interviews really showed me a bit of the simplistic way he was looking at the game. It's small things, but I think it just speaks to who he was as a Survivor player. For example, he was constantly referencing that without his nullifier, Dan would have been saved and Christian would have gone home. And to me, I'm like, well, why don't you realize after several months of this having happened that there's also a third option, which was that you could have just voted for someone else who wasn't Dan. Like, I don't have a problem with how he used the nullifier. We'll talk about that in a later rule. But to me, it's just really odd that he doesn't even see that there was a third path. It's like, oh, if I didn't use my nullifier, Dan would have been saved and Christian would have gone home. It's like, how do you not realize that you could have voted for, like, Carol or something like that and you still would have won the day? So just looking at it, I just don't feel like he viewed the game in that, like, kind of upper level that you would kind of need. And it was just very, you know, down the middle.
Yeah, I mean, I understand where he's coming from somewhat in that. I mean, that was, you know, that was a big thing that he did. And as he has said, his name will go down in Survivor history as being the first person to play it and play it correctly, which doesn't always happen with these advantages, as we've seen. But you're right. They could have done things a little differently. There just would have been some risk to it.
Yeah. But the thing is, I'm happy with the way that he played it. It's just odd to me because I just think that after several months of him, you know, looking back at his game and analyzing everything, you think he would realize by this point that, you know, there aren't two things that could have happened. It's not like, oh, Dan would have been saved or Dan would have been nullified. It's like, yeah, there are other options there. And I think that other players who just look at the game in a more multidimensional way, say like a Nick, for example, would definitely see that. And Carl, even after these many months in exit interviews, still doesn't seem to get that there were other options.
Okay. Yeah, no, I see what you mean. All right. So I think we can move on to the fourth rule now, which tells players not to let their emotions control them. What did you think of Alec here?
I don't really feel that Alec was overly emotional, and that's kind of a 180 from how I felt of him in the pre-merge, because I think that if you look at, like, okay, so if you look at a couple of things that you can point to as being emotional, the Natalia thing I think was painted to us as being very emotional, like she was annoying him, there was big move-itis. I think I tweeted at the time that Natalia said in exit interviews that, you know, the final straw for Alec was that she woke him up for a nap, which would be an emotional reaction, but it's an emotional reaction that I endorse. No one should wake people up from naps. You should be voted out for that. But then I was kind of satisfied with the way that he explained that strategically in his exit interviews and talked about not wanting to be at the bottom of the Goliath and not really feeling good with them and not feeling, you know, heard in his strategy when he had good plans and they wouldn't work with him. So I feel like you can debate the move for sure, but I feel like there was strategic basis there. And even Christian, who he saved, and he was happy that, you know, Christian was still around when he told Nick that the vote was coming for him. And he was happy Christian was around because he liked him, which seems emotional. But again, that decision was based on wanting to keep that connection with Nick, which seems very strategic for me. And as I've said, I feel like most of his relationships, if not all of his relationships, were pretty much rooted in strategy. So for me, I don't feel that he was overly emotional.
Yeah, I agree. And you covered pretty much what I was going to talk about. You know, he was playing Survivor as a game, and he wasn't going to let his emotions get tangled up in it. So, you know, I think you're, you know, 100% right on that one. Carl, on the other hand, seemed a little more emotional in his thinking at times. And I think the primary example of this was the Elizabeth vote. Some of what Carl did revolved around being annoyed with her. And I think some of the rest of it was that Carl never really forgave her for voting out Jessica, which caused Carl to let his emotions dictate that he wanted Elizabeth gone. Elizabeth herself saw it as him having a vendetta against her.
Yeah, I mean, the Jessica thing, that is a big deal. But when you're down in the numbers at the merge and you have 5 to 7 Davids and it's a huge vote where maybe you could get a number back, you know, Elizabeth really credits Carl with her demise. She feels like right. She could have got some momentum going, but like once the Goliath saw that even someone on her side like Carl was not going for it, they weren't going to like put their neck out on the line and kind of vouch for her there. So the Jessica thing, she, you know, obviously they had voted against each other. They had them in working together in the pre-swap. That is big. From then we saw them living together with some pretty petty gripes. Chickens, bamboo beds, like to me, you don't have to be best friends, but surely you get to a point where like you can work together and not have to like each other. But when he got to the merge, you know, in the feast and he was drinking and he was immediately throwing Elizabeth's name out, it's like, who did that help? Why would that be a good thing for the Davids? And to me, it was completely rooted in emotion.
Oh, yeah, I agree completely. And yeah, it just all goes back to Elizabeth again. So,
yeah, I think there was more, though. I think that if you looked at like some of the subtle things, for example, why does he immediately target Alec? I'm not saying that there wasn't reason to target him, but it's immediately being denied that reward that Alec beat him in. And he's just like immediately he has to go. To me, that's emotional. And a lot of the Gabby stuff, you know, it's social, it's emotional. It's all kind of like tangled up in that thing. And I do think that a lot of the time those like instinctual reactions were quite emotional.
Okay. Yeah, I think we'll get to more of that, the Gabby relationship, too, in a little bit here.
Yeah, probably in pretending to be nice.
Yeah. Hey, and that's where we're going next. Yeah, to the fifth rule.
What a segue.
So, yeah. So I before we get to Carl, let's stick with Alec. You know, again, I think he was very good at this part of the game. Jeff Probst said in an Entertainment Weekly interview that Alec made a lot of the relationships based just on his likable personality. So even though you had said earlier his relationships were strategic, I think the entry point was his likable personality.
Yeah.
Going all the way back to Jeremy, he said in his interviews that Alec was the person most liked by everyone on his tribe to the point where they couldn't believe he was just a waiter. He was so charismatic and funny that they just didn't think someone that young could be so well put together. And Alec knew that was his secret weapon. He said in a web confessional for this episode, this was where he kind of put himself down and said he wasn't the most strategic or the smartest guy, but he could play to his strengths of winning challenges and then charming those he won with to get them on his side.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm eating a lot of humble pie in kind of my preseason predictions of the season. For example, Dave, but I was on the first voicemails of the season with Rob, and I was like, this is the worst, you know, theme ever. Cut to my tweets after like the major David versus Goliath boots. And I'm like, you know what? I really feel it. Like, I'm eating a lot of humble pie, but especially with Alec. And I was like, why is he Goliath? And then Jeff Probst was saying that it was because he was like almost out of this world, charismatic and good looking. And I was like, well, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, because he's a bartender. Cut to the merge and he's aligned with every single person and people are like drawn to him in this really magnetic way. And I'm like, you know what? He is a Goliath of charisma. It does work. So yeah, I guess I was wrong. And I guess people who are bartenders with no money can be Goliath, but you can't really explain it.
Yes. So, you know, that pretty well sums up Alec, unless you had anything else. But
no, I think I said Goliath of charisma. So I feel like people will know that I feel like he had a good social game. And obviously there are secret scenes where Allison's like bawling that she has to get rid of her number one ally. Like, he had close relationships. He did well.
Right. Right. Now, Carl, on the other hand, we already hinted, was not quite the same, because while Jeff Probst was singing Alec's praises in that Entertainment Weekly interview, when he talked about Carl, he said Carl had a massive lack of awareness that led to his downfall. He was unable to read the situation and took for granted that the others were okay with the way he was taking on the leadership role.
Yeah, poor Carl is like the unfavored child of this double episode boot, where he's like just piling positivity onto Alec and then talking about a lot of the things that Carl did wrong. I do feel like he had good relationships with his people, you know, and from the beginning, right, he was already in that core group. Pat, Jessica, B, Davey, they were all with him, and he was in trouble from the get-go because he made pretty immediate relationships, and that's good stuff. But then when you obviously go forward, there were social problems with Elizabeth, there was Gabby, there were some issues there. And one of the things I think is funny that he said in exit interviews that, you know, he doesn't sugarcoat things. And it's like, okay, right, that's a part of who you are, but you can't just like explain it away, because that'll be why you lose the game. Like, you can be like, that's just me, I don't sugarcoat things, but okay, that's fine, you won't win Survivor.
Yeah, and you know, I've known people throughout my life who don't sugarcoat things, and there are different ways to go about it. There's ways to be blunt without also pissing off the person that you're being blunt to. And I've seen some who are good and some who are not good at it. And yeah, I don't know how he is in his regular life, obviously, but you know, he said that he thought everyone was in the decision process and he wasn't running the show and he wasn't trying to boss Gabby around, but he just guesses that it came off that way because he's an older guy and she's a younger lady. I don't know. I mean, you know, it's a weird situation because you have two very different perspectives on it.
Yeah, he doesn't take a lot of accountability for it in his exit interviews. And to be fair, that is a really hard thing to do, to be like, these are my flaws as a human being. But, you know, he calls her emotional. As you said, he's like, she's just a younger woman. It's a hard dynamic. You know, it wasn't just Gabby who obviously Elizabeth and Gabby were his two major relationship problems. But in terms of like the Godfather thing and how he was coming across, he was putting off a lot of people, like Kara, Christian, even Mike was annoyed at the way that he was kind of being spoken to. So again, you kind of just have to look at what the group is thinking. If it was just Gabby, you might be like, okay, fine, maybe that was just a really personal thing and that was just the way she was taking it. But the fact that so many people were taking it that way, and also just what I was observing pretty objectively in what he was doing, and the way that he was approaching people when he became Godfather Carl, it didn't look right.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right. I think we've finished up rule 5 there, so we can move on to the 6th rule, which warns players against being too much of a threat. Now, I don't think this applies at all to Alec, right?
No, yeah, this is not a risk. Let's just skip on from Alec.
Yeah, okay. So we go on to rule... Oh, wait, no. Okay.
Yeah, this is number one.
Yeah. Yeah, when I first saw the immunity necklace, I thought that it looked like it had a big target on it. If you look at it, you know, hanging right there. And in many ways it does, both literally and figuratively. And, you know, that was Alec. But he wasn't even just an immunity threat. He showed his stuff in all the challenges. You know, Alec said in a web confessional that winning reward challenges was part of his strategy. He had been the key to winning for everyone while they were on his team. And then he got to share a reward with them and talk to them. And I agree with the idea of using a reward to your benefit for getting to know other players and working with them. but I don't know about being the one who wins them all.
Yeah, I think that winning rewards for people, it was much worse for him than he realized, because what happens is that the people who you beat end up being a lot more annoyed at you than the people who you win it for are grateful. And even if you won it for someone 3 days ago and then you beat them, they're now annoyed at you. Like, you're only as good as like the last time that you've beaten them, you know? So I don't think that it was a great strategy for him. Like, obviously I don't begrudge him standing on a perch for 6 hours for immunity when he's actually in trouble. Like, that's something that you need, but you need to be like the out and out hero for reward challenges. Cause if you look at it, like, they were clearly so angry at it, especially as I said, Carl came back. He'd been beaten by Alec, and he immediately wanted Alec out. And Davey says in a secret scene that they want like an even playing field. And I guess that if you've lost that reward, and you know, eventually you are going to lose rewards unless you're Alec, you come back and you're thinking, well, whether I win reward now is basically whether I get picked on Alec's team or happen to choose the same rock as him. And that doesn't feel fair. You probably think, if we get rid of Alec, the next time I could maybe win the reward on my own merit, but it's just impossible against this like huge threat. And you become pretty resentful of it. I honestly feel that people are much, much angrier losing the reward than they would be grateful winning the reward. And you have to look at that other side, because at least half the people are going back to camp angry.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And on top of it, there was no hiding what kind of a physical threat he was. Everyone knew, you know, physical challenge, no problem. Puzzle challenge, he could do those too, as he showed last week in the reward challenge. And you know, I was going to sit down and list all the people who mentioned him being a threat, but that would just take too much time. You know, Jeff Probst even called it out in the reward challenge. He said, Alec making quick work of it as he's done all season.
Yeah.
And it's like, it was, yeah, well, it was so obvious. And it was interesting that was in his final episode. So I think that's why they put it in there. And, you know, Alec himself said in a web confessional for this episode that he was already a physical threat. And then, well, you mentioned it, you know, standing up in the immunity challenge for 5.5, 6 hours. Yeah, he needed to do it. But then coming in second was just icing on the cake.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. But so, you can't begrudge him when he's in trouble, you know, and he's next to Kristen. He probably thinks he can win. But
right.
For me, when you look at Alec against some of the similar archetypes who are a bit more, I do think he's really savvy, but even more savvy, someone like a Malcolm, for example, you know, Alec said that he could never go in and sandbag and be worse at the challenges because he was there for the experience. And it's a really tough thing to do because he's such an obvious threat that he almost has mm-hmm. to be like hiding core parts of his personality and working against who he is as a person to hide that threat level. But that is what you have to go in and do. Look at someone like a Jeremy. He was someone who did that same, you know, similar body type, similar threat level. And he had ways to work around that, whether it was, you know, he lost a lot of weight before he went on, or he had meat shields and stuff. And Alec was just like, okay, well, I'm there for the experience more than for the title, so I'm not going to sandbag. And again, as we've said, with like getting to day 39 and losing, like, that's okay if that's what you want to get out of the game, but we're going to criticize you on this podcast because you'll lose Survivor for it. So
right.
That's his prerogative, but it's obviously a bad strategic decision to be like, I would rather play the challenge as well and go home because of it. Well, then you will go home.
Yeah. And you know, some of the other Goliaths had talked about earlier that in the tribal portion of the game, you wonder, okay, why isn't John taking the lead in this individual portion where he could stand out? Because they were willing to let Alec do it. I mean, one, he was doing well, but two, it's like, good, take some threat level off of me.
Yeah, and also look at the point where he is winning reward challenges and being the hero, like especially that reward challenge in the episode he went home where he like throws the javelins onto the post. Like, look who had just gone home, Dan and John. So clearly they're coming for you if you're right, a physical right. threat. Like, maybe like hide in the shadows a little bit. I do think that his strategy instead of sandbagging was, he was like, okay, I'm going to go out, I'm going to try my best in the challenges, but I'm going to have enough social capital that will protect me. And as I've said, I think he was incredible socially. I called him a Goliath of charisma, but in weighing up that threat level versus the social capital, it still was enough to protect him. So how much of a threat was he that I think he was playing a phenomenal social game, and it still wasn't enough for people to be like, we'll save you. You know, he was just way too much of a threat. So I don't feel like that was a good strategy, because I don't think any amount of social capital could shield the threat level that he had made himself. And his only option really was to downplay that threat level as much as he did. But that's not what he went into the game wanting to do.
Right. And, you know, he was actually a threat for other reasons, too, in part because he was trying to play both sides. He had connections among both the Davids and the Goliaths.
Yeah.
And, you know, he tried to shift the target off himself. So I will give him a little credit for that, because he told Josh in that Hollywood Reporter interview that he tried to align himself with big targets who could potentially take some of that threat attention off of him and act as meat shields. But, well, that didn't exactly work. Yeah. And it's not going to work when you continue to show. You can align with everyone you want, but if you're going to continue to show how good you are, then none of that attention is going to be thrown off of you. And he also said in the CBS interview that he tried to get the target off himself by painting Carl as a bigger threat to Christian and Gabby because Carl was acting so confident there at that vote. Of course, that didn't help Alec either, but I do think it planted a seed with both of them for the follow-up vote.
Yeah, I think that when he was like on his last-ditch efforts on his final day, like I liked what he was doing, but it was a little bit too late. Like he was going around saying, you know, these are bigger threats, you know, namely Carl, but he was pointing to other threats. He was also talking to Christian about how Christian needs other threats around him. So he was using his threat level as much as he could. But it was just, you know, it was the final day at that point. This wasn't things that he was doing that I saw from the very beginning. So it's kind of going to fall on deaf ears when it's your final day and it's like your deathbed plea.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the decision had been made by then.
Yeah.
So as for Carl, he wasn't a physical threat like Alec. And for most of the other players, he wasn't really a threat at all. I think Steven put it best in his blog by saying he believed Carl was the biggest threat in the same way that he believed salads and wraps are fantastic survivor reward.
Ooh, the shade at salads and wraps.
I know.
What a subtweet.
He said nobody was worried about Carl winning challenges or the game overall. But there was a situation where he was a threat, and he was a threat to one person in particular, which was Gabby, of course. And by association, that apparently also included Christian. As Gabby said on the show, by acting like the Godfather, Carl would appear to be in control. And to show he wasn't, and that the two of them, Gabby and Christian, made moves of their own, they needed to vote him out. The funny thing is, that wasn't even the most threatening thing about Carl for them, because according to interviews, Carl was already planning to take out at least one of them potentially as soon as the next vote. And they saw the signs of distrust and acted on them.
Yeah, I think at the point, it's the opposite of Alec, where, as I said, Alec would really have to shield and hide parts of himself to not be a threat. Whereas Carl, I think, was in like the perfect situation to not be a threat. Like his main allies were Christian, Davey, and Nick. Like that is mm-hmm. such a good situation to conceal you and kind of like, you know, emerge maybe a little bit later on than this was a bit early in the game. And yet somehow Carl still ends up being the biggest threat, which I think like is an indictment on his game, where the fact that everyone's coming for you as a threat over Nick, who's so savvy, Christian, who's obviously so like out of this world intelligent, and Davey, who's made huge moves as well. And they're still looking at Carl like, well, he's a jury threat. He's going to get credit for our moves. Again, I feel like saying ding, putting it up there, and like it's just such obvious jury pandering. Like Angelina would be proud, because you just don't need to be doing it in such an obvious way. There are ways to, you know, let the jury know what you've done. They will find out without being just like, look at me. And that makes you a threat. And it's not a surprise to me that he went really shortly after doing that. Like he just put a massive spotlight / target on himself. And yeah. I don't think he needed to be a threat like Alec did, but I think he made himself one in, you know, pretty egregious ways.
Right. And even though he was only, I mean, he was an immediate threat really only to the one or two people, but those one or two people were able to gather the forces.
Yeah, it's funny because you either are a threat because of who you are or a threat because of what you're doing. I think for Alec, it was very much, you know, obviously it plays into each other. It's not like a binary thing. But for Alec, he is a threatening player in the game as who he is as a person. Whereas for Carl, I think it was like very much what he was doing, which should be better because then you can curb those actions. You know, you would think that he would kind of catch on, that he would know that people are gunning for him and kind of get a sense of those relationships, maybe put his foot on the brake a little bit, because I do believe he could have stopped it in its tracks, because he, I don't think, as a person came in as this like really threatening player, but just in his actions in the game, he became way too threatening in a way I really don't feel like he needed to.
Yeah, I agree. All right. I think we can move on to the seventh rule, mm-hmm. which talks about getting and playing idols and advantages.
And that's not important in the season. Definitely not.
No, definitely not. Now, you know, Carl was clearly ahead of Alec here, I guess you could say, both by properly playing the idol nullifier, although we've already talked about that some, and because the Davids as a whole were doing things we didn't see the Goliaths doing, like getting up at the crack of dawn to go idol hunting.
Yeah. Well, the Davids have thoroughly outmatched the Goliaths in this rule, I think, as a group, and Kyle's a part of that. You know, obviously the Nullifier, he helped find the vote steal. He's been a big part of that very advantage heavy strategy from the Davids. And as I said before, you know, I wish he had seen all the options that were possible with the Nullifier, and I don't think that he does see that very clearly. But I still don't hate the Nullifier strategy, because I do feel like people are like, well, he could have saved it. They could have voted for someone else. And I'm like, it's good that you know that he could have done that, because I don't think Carl could have done that. But it is so situational. I don't see why you would try so hard to save it, why you would risk it on this very important vote. I think in this very unique instance, he did have enough intel to know that it would work, that he would take out a big player at a key vote. He could claim the move. Again, I don't think he could have, should have claimed it so publicly, but that's a good way to use that and to get a lot of that credit. We did see some of his allies, for example, Nick, really didn't want it to work, because then no one would know about it. Then Nick would get all the credit for using the vote steal. He would get the credit for that move. But Kyle did kind of come over the top of him there and use it and get the credit, and he got the fishy. So in terms of that strategy, like, he really did achieve his objectives.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting, because all that happened and, you know, we're all sitting here, you know, saying, oh, that's great. And this is kind of a tangent here, but it occurred to me, if the Goliaths had gotten the Idle Nullifier and they were already, you know, pounding the Davids, and then one of the Davids is about to use an Idle and boom, the Goliaths come in and use the Idle Nullifier, we would have all been sitting here screaming at our television sets about what a horrible advantage that is. And it just, you know, gave the majority another way to keep the poor man down.
Yeah. But I still think that about the Nullifier. Like, because I tweeted a lot about how that would be what the Nullifier did. We've seen a similar version in Australian Survivor, so not to spoil too much of that. But it makes sense that to use the Nullifier, you have to have a majority. So it's going to help the majority. And I tweeted a lot about that. Then the Survivor gods wanted to make me look stupid. So they were like, in this very unique instance, we'll also pair it with the vote steal. So yes, if you pair the Nullifier with maybe another idol or the vote steal, it can help the minority, but I do think most of the time it's going to help the majority. I think it was great that we saw it, and I kind of feel like we could be done with it for now. Like, I think they will use it, but I don't think that they should. It's more of a good idea in theory than I actually feel like it ends up being in practice. Like, even Dan, that was like the most satisfying thing ever, right? Like, they built up Dan to be like this big Goliath oath, and they completely obviously nullified him. He went home, huge blindside, and even that, some people were like, I don't feel great about it, like, it just feels wrong.
Yeah.
So if the fact that it wasn't even like universally beloved in that instance, I'm like, how satisfying can it be in the future when it's like made to be unsatisfying?
Yeah, I suspect that it will be around. I think there'll be probably one per season, because there was such a fan reaction to it, and that's of course what the producers love. And so I don't think it will ever probably be played as well or in a way that the fans like so much. But I also think that sometimes the producers are hoping people will screw up. And I think Jeff Probst even said that in earlier interviews, like, well, we like to put something in there because if it works, great. And if it doesn't work, it can, you know, screw up in entertaining ways.
Well, I don't feel like the Nullifier can screw up in very entertaining ways, because I've spoken at length on Twitter about it. Everything I speak about at Twitter is at length. I'm always like struggling to fit the 280 characters. But for me, it's a defensive tool. And yes, you can waste it, but is that really entertaining? Like, okay, you used it and no one played an idol. But I don't feel like you could go home because you played it. Like, how could that happen? Because the thing is that you're going to play it on your target, and they'll go home, whether they play an idol and are nullified, whether they play an idol on someone else and they still go home because you voted them out, or whether they didn't have an idol to play at all. Like, yes, you wasted it, but that's not very entertaining. So I feel like the Nullifier, it can't be like hilariously funny in the fact that you get, you know, you use it really wrong. Like, idols can be funny. You get voted out with it in your pocket. You look like an idiot. I don't think you can be as stupid with the Nullifier. And I do think obviously it can have massive strategic ramifications for minorities that are already on the bottom that we tend to be rooting for. I definitely feel like this vote, this, you know, this use of the Nullifier was the peak. I know that, like, I keep being proven wrong with this, but I really feel like this was the best we're going to get out of it, and they should just quit while they're ahead, but I do not think that they will.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that one. As far as to bring it back from the tangent that I took us on there.
Yeah, I always rant when I talk about the Nullifier.
Oh, no, no,
so,
no.
Like, it's always going to go there.
Hey, I was the one who led us down that path. So I talked a little bit about already the way the Goliaths didn't go hunting for idols. And you know, Carl said in a web confessional last week, it showed that they were overconfident. Now, to get to Alec, for his part, he said in interviews that he wasn't purposely not looking for idols. He just, you know, well, he's out in the jungle. He doesn't have an alarm clock and he didn't naturally get up that early. I just feel, though, that if the Goliaths had really wanted to, they could have worked out a system like the Davids did. So at least one of them got up and woke the others. I mean, certainly they didn't all sleep late, or maybe they did. They were all heavy sleepers. I don't know.
Yeah, that's an element of being Goliath, is that you are heavy. You know, you sleep late. I'm definitely a Goliath. I feel like a lot of Alec's game is coming down to his love for sleep. Like, it's not the first time we've mentioned on this podcast, but like a man after my own heart. Like, I cannot knock it. Yeah, it's not great. As I said, the Goliaths have not done well in this area. And is there anything worse for your edit than people running around searching for idols and just those shots of you sleeping? Like, how judgy is the edit when it just has the camera right on the people sleeping in when other people are running around looking for idols? And also with Alec, obviously, idols and advantages were used against him a lot of the time based on his own intel that ended up, you know, completely
right,
making him lose control of his own game. So advantages were not a good vibe for Alec on this season.
No, not at all. All right, so I think that wraps up the main portion of the rules, and we can move into Appendix A, which is about keeping your end goal in mind when voting. And a big part of this rule is that the player should, whenever possible, vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. And we're still in the part of the game where the player should be voting out the strong threats who are on the opposing side. And, I mean, it's pretty clear that happened with the first vote of the night, though Christian did note that keeping Alec around would have taken some of the heat off himself. I just don't see how he could have done anything else without fracturing his alliance.
Yeah, from the Davids perspective, like, the only reason you'd keep Alec around is just because you feel so bad that he helped you so much and they immediately turned on him. But that's not Survivor. That's not what we credit here. So, yeah, I definitely think Alec was a good target for them. And then in terms of Alec in this rule and the way that he was approaching it and making his votes count, as I've said, I really don't feel like at the end his votes were counting at all. And I don't think that it's a coincidence that he votes for someone who he helped tip off to the fact that they could be saved. That Christian vote did not count. Like, literally, it didn't count. And then the Angelina vote, you know, didn't have any merit at all either. It really didn't help him. It only alienated Angelina further. So his votes really weren't counting towards the end, and then he got voted out, and, you know, that's pretty much how it snowballs.
Yeah, yeah. So then we move into the second vote of the night, and we've already discussed how many of the players shouldn't have been too worried about Carl from a threat level. And I'm going to refer to Steven's blog again, and he said, Carl was the perfect person for the Davids to keep around. Actually, you already talked about some of this, too. He was David Strong. He told everyone exactly what was happening, what he was planning, and he was predictable. But again, there was one particular person that we've already talked about for whom Carl was a definite threat, and that was Gabby. Carl had already pulled in Angelina, who Gabby saw as her replacement within the alliance. And more importantly, Carl was telling Gabby's closest ally to lie to her so he could vote out another one of her allies. So it was pretty clear that Gabby needed to get rid of him right away, because if she and Christian had allowed him to have his way in this vote, then he might well have been able to take the next step in the next vote. You sideline Gabby this time and you turn the alliance against them to vote one of them out next time. And on top of it, she's lost an ally.
Yeah, I'm in two minds with this move, because it's been very divisive online, I think. And I think that letting Allison go and letting Carl have more of the numbers, you can't do that. Like, clearly, you're not aligned with him anymore, especially Gabby. You can't do that. Obviously, the Goliaths getting rid of Carl, perfect for them. But in terms of Christian and Gabby, I did really like Rob's idea on the know-it-alls of maybe you take out an Angelina, then you maintain the numbers. Now you've kind of got Carl there as this major antagonist. He's not going to work with the Goliaths. You keep those sides separate, and Gabby and Christian are very much in the middle. Because now I really do worry, and we'll see how it pans out. But it is a possibility that, you know, now with Carl's gone, he was this, you know, divisive factor. But now can Mike come back, work with Nick, you know, Davey, they all kind of mesh together and then go for the obvious power couple of Gabby and Christian. And I don't know if socially they have protected against that.
Yeah, I don't know. The only thing I can think of for not going after Angelina is I think just about everyone wants her in their final three.
But does Christian need her in his final three? Like, Christian's someone like
true.
Like a Suri, where it's like you can sit next to anyone. If anything, it's better to get rid of someone that's going to take up a final three spot. And I mean, for Gabby, I feel like the move to take out Carl, like he was already coming for her. They had their own problems. It makes a lot of sense for her. But then from Christian's perspective, I do think someone like Angelina, at least you have the numbers. At least you're in the middle of everyone. And I don't feel like he needs a goat. So for him, it kind of ticks those boxes.
Right. But he had to get everyone else on board.
Yeah, it's tough. Obviously, we didn't see it even as an option. And it makes a lot of sense. Like, he's hearing all these things from Carl. Carl's putting everyone off. Carl's particularly coming for Gabby. Like, just get rid of Carl. But it's also kind of good having Carl there. Like, might have taken jury votes just by being this, like, huge threat and the leader. But he also was, like, out in front of everyone taking bullets. So that was a nice thing for them to have. But yeah, the push came to shove a little bit too early with the fact that he was already saying, you know, don't tell Gabby and stuff. Like, it got pretty dicey. I don't know if I can be mad at the move. And I think a lot of people are down on Christian for this. But I don't feel like Christian and Gabby have been, like, so in sync that I don't feel like he could have gone against her here. Like, if he was going to do anything other than vote for Carl, he would have really been fracturing, like, his major relationship in the game. So I guess that's not, he didn't want to do that.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I've seen some of that too. And I know at the beginning of the voicemail podcast, which is all I've had a chance to listen to so far, Rob and Rourke, other possibilities. But I'm with you. I don't see how he could have done anything but support Gabby here. And I think we may have mentioned this, but Gabby had an excellent web confessional this week that explains her thoughts leading up to the vote. And, you know, she talks about how Davey and Carl, she believed, saw her as a liability because she's emotional and shows her emotions. And to her, that was a sign that she was on the bottom of the five. And it turns out she was absolutely correct.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about how she was mad that Carl didn't think more than one vote ahead because this is Survivor, not tic-tac-toe. Now, I will say on Facebook, I pointed out to her that sometimes you do have to think a couple moves ahead in tic-tac-toe, but you know, that's not really the point there.
Why blank lost in tic-tac-toe? They didn't think three moves ahead.
That's right. But anyway, every time, you know, she raised those possible contingencies, Carl just said she was overthinking things and shut her down. So, you know, she figured if he didn't want to think ahead, then fine, might be her opportunity to use that blind spot against him. And that's exactly what she did. Now, I do wonder, you know, she said that he didn't want to talk about possible outcomes, more moves ahead. I wonder if Carl didn't want to talk about the planned future moves because, well, we now know he intended to get rid of her shortly.
Yeah. Yeah. Carl doesn't want to talk about his moves in like two moves from now. It's like, yeah, because you're the move in two moves from now. Like, right. Actually, I would think Carl would probably just tell her that. Like,
So, and, you know, I also do want to talk about, because you brought this up, that, you know, was Christian being ungrateful by turning on those who had helped him get to this point? And when I say you brought this up, you know, that debate that's going on. Carl said in some interviews that he was most surprised by Christian flipping because they had saved him and he didn't think it made sense for Christian's game. But on the other hand, and I've already mentioned this, Carl said in other interviews that the plan was to vote out Allison this time and then Gabby or Christian next, because those two weren't in Carl's final plans. So I'm not surprised by it. It seems to me that Gabby and Christian made the right move here. They were the next target.
Yeah, Carl seems to not understand why Christian would want to turn on them when he literally has a final three of Nick and Davey, and Nick doesn't want to go to the end with Christian. I don't think I've heard a secret scene of Davey talking about his final three plans, but that's at least two of those three people that he's working with that don't want to go to the end with Christian. To be fair, I don't think anyone wants to go to the end with Christian.
No,
but
no one should.
Yeah, no one should. But like, if the status quo is cutting you out, like, best to shake things up again, I guess, and like just try and like maneuver your way there by causing chaos. So that makes a lot of sense. You know, Carl as well is like, I just couldn't believe that we worked so hard to get a David majority and then they flipped on the David. It's like, but you also flipped on Gabby. So, you know, he flipped on you, but you can't just be like, he's the only one who flipped on the Davids. Carl flipped on a David as well.
Right, right.
By so, leaving Gabby out of the plan.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we can move on to Appendix B, which talks about how players should set themselves up for the jury. We know that Carl did try to set himself up by his bing.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that we've already discussed this, that the move against Carl, you know, Gabby had brought it up in thinking about the jury. Like, if we don't do this, if we don't take care of this, he's going to take credit for all these moves. So I think there was a little bit of that in some considerations. I don't think it was a major factor, but I think it was in the thought process.
Yeah, it's not really what we were seeing on the screen, but definitely the fact that he had become a jury threat was a reason that they took him out. So, like, I guess credit to him that he had risen above what we see as other really strong players to be a bigger jury threat than them, but also, like, bad job on him because that was a reason that he went home. So, he was obviously thinking about it. And I've said it before, the Bing thing, just a really bad move, like an underrated bad move, in the fact that he went home so soon after and people literally said ding. Like, you know, it's a bad move when people reference it as they vote you out. So I think that was, way too much. There are other ways to pander to a jury, and people this season seem not to be doing it well. And then with Alec as well, like, he said in exit interviews that he hadn't even thought about jury pandering until it all came up with Angelina. Like, he hadn't even thought about that as a concept in the game. But I do think with Alec, he was just so inherently likable and such like a big game player and threatening that he would have had no real problems, I don't think, at the end with the jury.
Yeah, I agree. And although it wasn't a reason particularly that they took him out, someone as likable as Alec, who had relationships with so many people, you can't sit with him at the end. Yeah. Even Christian, it would have been kind of a toss-up between them.
Yeah.
All right. So before I wrap up my conclusion, do you have any other final thoughts?
Yes, I have for Alec and Carl. So for Alec, as I've said, he was such a surprise from what I thought it would be before the season. And he really did have an incredible social game. And I think was a better strategist than even he seemed to give himself credit for. But, you know, he refused to downplay his threat level in pretty meaningless circumstances like rewards. And he put the experience of being on the show before the title. He was so flexible with so many different strategic relationships that he handed out favors he was never quite repaid for. And he lost the strategic momentum of his own game in a Goliath demolition that he helped cause. So I think for me, that's why he lost.
All right. And Carl.
And for Carl, you know, I think he could have been sitting pretty in an alliance of threats that had just won the majority. And he was a big part of that uprising and seemed to look at the game, you know, quite slowly. So this tribal war that he had won worked really well for him. But when the game grew more complex, he unnecessarily emerged as a leader. He put people off. He alerted them to his threat level by giving orders and saying bing. And he didn't listen to other people and he wasn't aware. So he had, you know, social conflict with key players. He let those arguments control his strategy some of the time. And he also didn't seem to think about other players' individual wants, needs, and relationships. So that put people offside. And that's why I think Carl lost. And can I just say that the only other time that I've done this was Y Blank won for Survivor New Zealand, which was very much like an A-plus report card, and I felt really great. And in doing this, I was just going through trying to find all these terrible things these players did, and I feel really, really bad. But that's the point of the podcast, so...
Bad karma points. It can be rough sometimes.
Yeah, you're used to it. You're just like, okay, let me just destroy your game right now. I feel bad doing in such concise ways. Just like, here's where you failed. Here's where you failed. But anyway,
I still feel bad too. But hey, it's the job we do. So you've already hit on a lot of the things. But Alec had the interesting strategy of purposely trying to take on the role of reward challenge winner. He wanted to use that as a stepping stone for his strategic and social game. Unfortunately, he never quite found the right time to get his plans moving in the right direction in terms of that strategic game. He talked a good game to some of the Davids, but actions speak louder than words. And in his actions, he kept standing with the rest of the Goliaths, except maybe Angelina. Carl, on the other hand, did find himself in a good position with many of his allies until he became the Godfather. He seemed to think he was building consensus, but at least two of the Davids didn't see it that way, along with several of the Goliaths. It reminded me of how Angelina thought the Goliaths had consensus on voting out Christian first at the merge because she pushed it so hard that it felt to her like they were all in agreement. One difference is that, if anything, I think Carl pushed harder because he never, at least that we saw, even asked Christian, and he fully excluded Gabby. Both of them were threats in their own way. Alec was the kind of threat that was clear to everybody and just about everybody worried about him. Carl was really only a threat to a couple people at this point, but those people took advantage of the way he had been acting and took the opportunity to turn the tables on him. And that is why Alec and Carl lost.
Do you feel bad?
A little bit, but we got to do what we got to do. So, you know.
They understand at this point.
They understand. like Davey said, it's a game move. You know, it's nothing personal. It's a game move.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So if it were personal, you'd know. You know, there were times when I was writing these articles where, oh, my God. Yeah. But you know, it's all game.
Yeah. And I think we credited, you know, where they were good as well. But they lost. So only one person can win.
Okay, so now it comes time for the predictions part. And I'm sure Jessica is sitting at home going, aha, I don't have to do these, but I'm going to ask her to make her predictions on Twitter so that we can see them. In the meantime, we know we have the family visit, which probably won't play much into the strategic game unless someone really screws over someone else. It probably won't happen. Aside from that, in the first preview, Gabby seems to be saying she wants to target Christian. I'm not buying it.
Yeah. They say that every preview.
Right. And I continue to agree with what Rob said a few weeks ago. I'll worry about Christian when he's not featured as a target in the preview.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I think we saw cleverly edited clips. For example, there was the confessional with Gabby saying she wants to vote out her closest ally. That could easily have started with her saying, I want people to think I want to vote out my closest ally. And they just, you know, for the purposes of the preview, they cut off that beginning part. Mm. Plus, Gabby said in an Entertainment Weekly exclusive web confessional that Christian is an even bigger threat after his immunity challenge win, and she wants to keep him around. She was already keeping him around as a nerd shield, and now she wants to keep him around as a meat shield. So I feel like something big would have to change for her to flip in that way.
Yeah.
Then the second preview shows Nick saying Christian is dead to him and Christian saying Nick wants his revenge. This seems like awfully strong feelings from Nick. And I further find this interesting because, well, we just mentioned it. Davey has talked previously about how their earlier moves, they're just game moves, nothing personal. Nick, of all people, knows how this game is played. And I cannot believe Mason would turn on Dixon so emotionally. So once again, I feel like we're being led astray somehow in the previews.
Yeah.
So, you know, what does that leave us? Well, not much. If it's not Christian, who is it? Will Christian and Gabby succeed in pulling the other Davids back together? If so, which Goliath will they vote out? If I'm right and Gabby is not targeting Christian, then I think you look back at the preview and you see, okay, who is she talking to? She was talking to Kara, which means she was lying to Kara. And to me, that suggests Kara could be the next target. Since I have nothing else to go on, that's going to be my prediction. Kara, what do you think?
I didn't really know where to go with this. The season's been really hard to predict. I also feel like I don't feel like Christian's going. And even if there was some sort of insurgency against him, like he does have relationships. I feel like he could get intel. He has an idol as well. Like, I just don't feel like it's his time. I feel like that would be an incredibly impressive move to pull off to blindside Christian with an idol next episode. That would be amazing, but it would be really tough. I could see a world in which Davey is sacrificed after Carl, which I hate to say because I love Davey, but it might explain some gaps in his edit when he's such a fantastic character to kind of go out in this weird middle ground at the final eight. You know, Nick's obviously protected by his idols as well, and he's obviously a huge threat who was just on the wrong side of the vote. But I could kind of see a world where Davey is gone at eight, and then there's more of a shakeup again at seven, and Nick kind of makes things work more on his own, because Nick's my official winner pick. Now it's a bit of a harder way for me to see him get to the end now that he was on the wrong side of the vote. But like, I can still see it. I feel like they're never going to come for Angelina, because why would you not want to sit next to her in the final three? So if I look at the people who are on the wrong side of the vote, even though there have been so many shakeups this season, and I'm probably so wrong to just look at it straightforward, I think at the final eight, maybe they just take out Davey and then think that deck kind of reshuffles from there.
Okay, interesting.
I'm glad I don't have to be on next week to talk about how wrong I was, though.
That's right. Well, we'll talk about it for you. So
why Shannon lost at the predictions. I made a lot of those puns today.
Yeah, well, we'd have to do a lot of podcasts for how often we're wrong, because I think I've been right once. So, you know, what are you going
to
do?
Well, that's just a testament to how great Survivor is.
Right, exactly. Especially this season. You know, can't predict it.
If you could predict everything, why would you watch?
Right. Exactly. Okay. Well, as we wrap up, I want to remind all you contact lens wearers to check out Simple Contacts at simplecontacts.com/survivor20 or enter the code survivor20 at checkout so you can save $20 on your lenses. Also, we are deep in the heart of holiday shopping season. In fact, as we record, it's already Hanukkah by Shannon, and it will be for those of us in the U.S. by the time you're listening to this podcast. So if you're buying anything on Amazon, head over to the RHAP Amazon page at www.amazon.com/shop/RHAP, or just click on the Amazon banner on robhasawebsite.com to help support RHAP without it costing you anything. Just this morning, I was on Amazon through those links buying slightly belated Hanukkah presents for my niece and nephew, plus for a Christmas present for children of friends of ours. Not to mention some of the things I bought for myself. So that's www.amazon.com/shop/RHAP or click the Amazon banner on robhasawebsite.com. We need a hashtag. And I think I have one that you came up with.
I also had one. Let's see if they're the same.
Goliath of charisma.
That was mine. I feel like that's a sign that we should use it.
Yes, absolutely. As soon as you said it, I knew that had to be the hashtag. So. So, and of course, there's the hashtag for this podcast overall, hashtag YXLost. Everyone listening should make sure you're getting all the Survivor commentary you can handle by subscribing to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts at robhasapodcast.com/survivor, or just set it up on your favorite podcatcher. We here are also on the Reality TV Wrap-Ups feed. So by subscribing there, you get the know-it-alls, the wiggle room, the B&B, you name it, it's there. If anyone wants to talk to Shannon, Jessica, me, there are several ways that you can do that. None of our Twitter handles are very complicated because Shannon, what's yours?
At Shannon Gaetz. So that's my name. At least for the next year, that will be my name. So G-A-I-T-Z.
Okay. And for people in the U.S., that's G-A-I-T-Z.
I always say it as Zed. Oh, my God. I didn't even see it as a cultural problem until now. I've done like 50 podcasts saying Zed. Oh, my God. Yeah. No wonder people aren't following me. No, I'm checking.
Yeah, hopefully people don't get confused that easily. But just in case, you know, I am similarly at David Bloomberg, and it's going to stay that way, you know, ad infinitum. Jessica is the most complicated of the three of us at Jessica Lewis 89. Another great way to talk to us is to become an RHAP patron and join the patron Facebook groups where all three of us participate in discussions. To do that, go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. To help support all the RHAP podcasts and also look at the various Patreon levels to find out what other perks you can get, like special podcasts, videos, and much more. With that, thanks to Scott St. Pierre, who does all the editing on the Why Blank Lost podcasts. Thanks, as always, to Will from America for the theme song. And Shannon, special thanks to you for stepping in and doing such a great job again, even though it was harder to criticize than it was to congratulate.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I don't know, anyone who's listened to the international coverage will know that I'm very happy to criticize people. I think it's just that I was like, it was rule after rule, like a relentless wave of criticism. So I just like, people who listen to the international coverage will be like, what are you talking about? You are so mean all the time. Stop it. So I'm not really that nice.
All right. Well, for everyone else, Jessica will be back next week after she digs herself out of the pile of work. Jessica and I will see you then. And of course, Shannon, everyone can see us on Twitter or Facebook. In the meantime, happy Hanukkah and have a great week.
Bye. If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why blank lost. And this is why blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why blank lost.
This isn't a replacement for your periodic full high.